Hello and welcome to the Lancet podcast. It's Thursday, October the 12th. I'm joined by our editor, Richard Horton. Richard, today is the day we should have been publishing the study about the casualties in Iraq, but everything's happened a day early.
Yes, indeed, Richard. We were scooped, so to speak, on our own embargo. Several papers in the United States reported the story a day early. I think this story was probably just too compelling to hold for another 24 hours. And indeed, it provoked an immediate political response from George Bush, who at a press conference said pretty much straight away that he didn't believe the results, nor did his military leadership in Iraq or local Iraqi politicians. So the whole story moved from being an issue of public health to one of politics rapidly, almost instantaneously. It's not usual that The Lancet publishes any paper that has much direct political interest, and certainly not that provokes a president of the United States to deny the possibility of what we were reporting. But that was the extraordinary situation in this case.
And just remind us what happened 2 years ago, because we published the author's first findings almost exactly 2 years ago, and that study and The Lancet's name was mud really at the time, wasn't it?
The study was really attacked very hard, and we were attacked too. I think the difficulty with the first study was two parts. First, actually, that study was less rigorous than the one we're publishing now. It was good, but it wasn't as good as the one we've just published today. And secondly, the timing. The paper we published before was really just a couple of weeks before the presidential election. So you had George Bush slugging it out with John Kerry, and out came this paper. It wasn't helped by the fact that there was a comment that the paper had only been submitted to a journal in order to get it published before the election. So it looked like there was a little bit of liberal spin being thrown into the whole equation. That did complicate the story. This time around, we are true a month or so away from midterm elections in the US. But this study was only completed in June, July. The authors very quickly wrote the paper up, submitted it to us. We got it very quickly reviewed. The paper was an incredibly strong one, so it rapidly moved into publication. I don't think anybody can say that it was published with any deliberate intent to influence the political process. But clearly it does influence the political process, given the terrible massacres that are taking place on a daily basis in Iraq.
And going back to the news coverage, has it been fair and accurate as far as you've seen at the moment?
I have been incredibly impressed with the way the media have handled this. This is a very complicated story where the most important part of this whole paper is understanding the methodology. That's not something newspapers or television or radio journalism do. They don't spend time talking about methods. But in this particular case, they have been scrupulous in making totally clear how the study was done in clusters, the numbers of homes visited, the numbers of families interviewed, the issues about chasing down death certificates, what the rates per thousand per year of deaths were before and after the invasion, what that means then in working out projections for the whole population. I mean, in incredible detail. So I would say, you know, this is a real tribute to the mass media for the care and attention they've given this report. I don't think anybody can say that this has been unduly spun. The media have included critical commentators as well as more supportive commentators. So I think this report does provide a basis for a very informed public debate about what's taking place in Iraq.
Okay, so media, job well done. What about the politicians?
Well, here I'm saddened, really, because in the US, George Bush immediately denounced the paper. It sounds to me like he'd be a fantastic reviewer for The Lancet, because he clearly read every single word of the paper, is a statistical expert on cluster randomized surveys, and will be able to provide reviews for us whenever we get a paper like that. You know, the slightly more humble and sensible reaction would have been to say, this is clearly a complicated issue. We need to take time to look at the paper. If there is an issue raised by serious investigators about harm to human health in Iraq, we will need to listen to that. He could have said that. It would have delayed a response. It would have shown him to be a thinking person. But what he actually showed was that he was an unthinking person. He was somebody who was going to dismiss serious and brave work done by people on the ground in Iraq. I think that really shows how superficial his thinking is on this issue. And it's extremely insulting to those Iraqis who went out, knocked on doors and put their lives at risk to gather these data.
And in a moment, we can hear one of the study authors talking to me about the details of how the study was done, and fascinating it is too. Richard, could we just end by asking about a comment that you've written alongside this article, broadening this out in terms of, if you like, the agenda now in terms of international policy and the formulation of a foreign policy?
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to be despairing about what's going on in Iraq, and there are probably many good reasons why we should be despairing. But I want to try and say that this is a point where we can draw a line in the sand. You know, we've learnt a lot from the Iraqi enterprise. We need to say, do we have the right foreign policy to deal with failing states, with states that are run by dictators, with states where we know that there is great civilian pressure? Because I'm not sure that we do have the right foreign policy, because this foreign policy of progressive preemption, as Tony Blair has called it, has led us into this quagmire of bloodthirsty chaos. What we, I would say, as somebody who comes from a health field, what we should be thinking of is that every intervention we do in foreign policy terms should be measured by the impact it has on human health. We think about human security, not national security. We think about humanitarian issues, not just purely economic issues or issues of self-interest. That might sound naive and idealistic, but look, we are talking about human beings. They are our kin. We are one family, one human family, and we should, I think, act with respect and humility in everything we do, whether we're talking about being a doctor, a nurse, or a politician, or a general. And I think that's the lesson that comes out of that. Think about the situation in terms of humanity rather than in terms of a military adventure.
Earlier, I spoke to one of the study authors, Dr. Gilbert Burnham. He's a professor of public health at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. He explains more about the methodology of the study.
We used basically the standard cluster sampling method that's used in many developing countries and also used in conflict situations. We used this in a way where we collected information from 50 clusters throughout Iraq, and our intent was to collect the information proportionate to the population size, so larger areas got more clusters than smaller areas. And then we did 40 households in each cluster, and this was larger than we did the last time, and I think helped bring down the spread of the confidence intervals substantially. We would, of course, like to have done more clusters, but there is a trade-off between the sample size that one wants and the risk that one is willing to discuss with their survey team.
Presumably, again, looking at the methodology, once you've selected a cluster, and you've already explained how you selected clusters according to population density in the country, so the clusters are representative, you actually have to interview households almost sort of next door to you, just to make it easier for the researchers on the ground to gain the confidence of the local community once they start doing the interviews.
Yes, we did 40 households with one start household, and we kept going until we did the 40 adjacent households. Now, we probably could have reduced our intra-cluster similarities by taking every second or every third or every fourth household, but that would have spread out the size of the cluster, and we felt that would have increased the risk to the interviewers.
And in terms of the numbers, you, through your clustering sampling techniques, interviewed over 1,800 households, which totaled over 12,000 individuals who were interviewed by your researchers. What were your broad findings?
We found that the excess mortality over the 40 months post-invasion was around 654,000. And of those 654,000, 601,000 were due to violent causes. And among the different causes of violent deaths, we found that gunfire was the most common right from the beginning, and that has continued.
650,000 is a huge figure, and even the lower confidence interval around that figure is still a huge figure. Statistically, and obviously the research is peer-reviewed here in The Lancet, that is an enormous leap, isn't it? 650,000 from the X 100 that you actually found among the households that you surveyed. Are you totally convinced that you can extrapolate in that way?
Yes, because if we look at the trends from the invasion to the present time, or at least until we finish the survey in July, for the first 18 months post the invasion, the numbers were virtually the same as what we found last time. And it should probably not come as a surprise to anyone who has been reading the newspaper or the television to see that the number of deaths have been increasing steadily as the time of the war has progressed. One of the things that comes as a surprise to many people is that these numbers are so much larger than what are reported from various organizations that actually count bodies. And I think the organizations that are counting bodies and now the U.S. Department of Defense, which also tracks deaths of Iraqis as well, is that these are pretty well confined to certain areas that have ready access to the media and where the mortuaries and so forth are easily visited. But our study shows that these violent events are happening throughout the country. It's not just isolated in a few locations. And then if we look at the trends, and that's the final table in the paper, if we look at the trends in the cumulative number of bodies identified or violent deaths reported, and we compare that to the trends in the change in rates that we found in our study, these are virtually identical.
And that concludes this week's Lancet podcast. Do email us with any queries. podcast@lancet.com. See you next week.